You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont. And the name of that tune was Hot Texas.
And we are so happy to have you with us tonight for episode 162. And we have a full house and we're going to start bringing everybody on. So welcome. Welcome, John Goodwin and Emily Goodwin joining us right now.
Hello. Jim and Bobby Jean.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you.
So where are you joining us from?
Hollywood, California.
Old stomping ground. Well, we're delighted to have you with us tonight. We're going to bring on Mr. Bill Markley. Bring on Bill. There he is in the white hat.
Yeah.
Right.
Welcome, Bill. Welcome back, Bill. And where are you joining us from?
I'm coming from warm and balmy South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
Not.
Oh, yeah.
And also joining us, coming back for another visit, is Kellen Cutsforth. How are you doing, Mr. Kellen?
He's a bad
just
guy.
Fine.
Yeah. He's in a black hat.
Yeah, I know.
For our listeners that maybe aren't watching, we got black hat and white hat and no hat tonight.
You're dangerous.
I know. Kellen, did we ask you where you were joining us from?
No, I'm from the I'm reaching you from the state of Colorado, Mile High City.
Okay. Right. Very dangerous. Good. Well, John and Emily are with us kind of for a little short time tonight, but such an important time. We're delighted to have you with us. And tell us what is going on in your lives that all the public will want to know about.
Well, we are we're kicking off with the Hollywood Christmas Parade. It's going to be live on the streets, Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, so November 30th. It supports the Toys for Tots, and we are right here behind us. That's Hollywood Boulevard, and that's where the parade kicks off. And we, in this building here, we host the green room for the parade as well.
And it's something we've been doing. We love it because we've always been very involved with community activities since we've been here in Hollywood. And when we launched our line of books that were written by L. Ron Hubbard back in the 30s and 40s, we re-released these things in the late 2008, 2009, and they're called Stories from the Golden Age. And so we've originally had a float in the parade, and then when the parade was purchased by a TV producer, he said, balloons. I got one word for you, balloons. So we made a special six-story balloon. It rides on a helium balloon, and it was based off of this book here. It's Under the Black Ensign. So we had this Captain Tom Bristol that we made into this huge pirate with his sword and a chest, which says Stories from Golden Age by L. Ron Hubbard. So it's 80 books there. But we've been doing this ever since then. And so we became the Green Room because we're right here at the start of the parade. So it's been an amazing experience for us that every year we're honored to be able to help and participate in that because it's the biggest community event in Hollywood, and it's open the entire route from right here on almost to La Brea and going all the way down Hollywood Boulevard to Vine up to Sunset Boulevard and then back up again. It's about a 3-mile route that hundreds of thousands of people line up on to be able to see the famous celebrities, which are.
Well, the grand marshal this year is actor Luke Wilson. They've hundreds of movies and shows. You can look them up. There's also going to be a special presentation to Anthony Anderson. We will have our local police captain here, the fire chief, and the sheriff will all be riding in the parade, as well as some of our city council members. Other actors and notables, let's see. Remember Bond babe, Denise Richards, she'll be here. Mina Suvari, Montel Williams is one of the hosts. Eric Estrada from Chips, he'll be one of the hosts. And Laura McKenzie does the travel show. We'll have Tori Spelling and also a bunch of the cast from Beverly Hills 90210 will be here. Vivica Fox. There'll be a whole bunch of music performances. We have some of the LA Laker legends that will be here. There are about, 100 celebrities that will be riding in the parade. And for anybody who wants to catch it, if you're not here in Hollywood, you can watch it on the CW network. And it's going to be airing on December 12th at 7 p.m. So anybody can tune in and watch it. It's a great parade. Lots of marching bands and floats and performances. Of course, Santa. And it all benefits the Marines Toys for Tots program.
Because the Marine Toys for Tots actually started here in Los Angeles. So this is the kickoff event for the Toys for Tots. And it's just really special. We really like to honor the our armed forces with this parade. We love to honor them. You know, the police, the fire, and the sheriff department, which were just... They were very busy, but they were heroes with all the fires. Yeah. Pre-show. It was just a crazy time. So we want to take advantage of this to acknowledge them and thank them very much for their service.
Now, I have a very quick question because I might not be right. It's possible. But Gene Autry used to ride in that parade.
Here comes Santa Claus.
He wrote that song at the parade here.
He wrote that song because he could hear. Yeah, he could. He was. Yeah, and he was like right before Santa. And so he would hear everybody in the crowd saying, "Here comes Santa Claus," because he was, and he would, wasn't like, "Here comes Gene Autry." They were all going, "Here comes Santa Claus."
Yeah. And the parade before it became the Hollywood Christmas parade, it used to be called the Santa Claus Lane Parade.
Yeah.
Lyric in the song. Santa Claus Lane. Because that's what it was originally. It was the Santa Claus Lane Parade.
How far back does the parade go?
We're celebrating the 93rd anniversary this year.
And it missed two years because of World War II and because of the pandemic. So
95 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
What time is it Sunday at LA time?
6 p.m.
6 p.m., yeah. Yes.
6 p.m., okay.
Yeah, a lot of people line up first thing in the morning on the streets, and it's going to be a busy day in Hollywood.
Yes.
Yeah. Very fun. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for dropping by and sharing that. Now we all want to be there, right, Bill and Kellen? Should we meet there?
Well, be sure to tune in if you're not in L.A.
Exactly. And Captain Tom will be looking for you.
And we look forward to seeing you next year, both of you. We wish you the happiest of Thanksgiving and holiday and a good, wonderful New Year's. And we plan to be out there in April. So
we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you.
We have your seats all waiting for you.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay.
We're going to wish you a happy holiday. Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you so much. All righty. Have fun. Yeah. Well, I want to go to that parade now. All the years we lived there, we did the Rose Parade, but we never went down to the Hollywood Parade.
We might have watched it on TV a couple of times.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, how many years did you live there?
Long enough that we could have done that parade more than once.
Well, we moved to Pasadena in 91. And then in 99, we moved to Santa Clarita.
And then here in 2017. So we were there a pretty long time.
27 years. Guys, I'm serious tonight, so don't make any mistakes because I'm wearing my badge.
Yeah, he's got it. I don't know if you can see.
Deputy Stockman badge.
Yeah, he has a Stockman badge. We're getting ready for our first wrangle. All right, let's see. Where are we at, Jim? Where are we at? All right, so we are welcoming officially now Bill Markley and Kellen Cutsworth, and they're back for a second showdown tonight. And we are delighted to have you back. They're going to be wrangling over two hot topics. But first, let's tell everybody a little something about them.
Do we know anything about them?
Well, you're gonna share
We have a combined bio for both gentlemen. Tonight's featured guests, Bill Barkley and Kellen Cutsworth, have much in common. Both award-winning authors, they are members of Western Writers of America and featured columnists for Western Writers of America Roundup magazine, which Bobby's holding up. They also write for magazines like True West. Tonight, we are featuring their co-authored books, Old West Showdown. Two authors wrangle over the truth of the Old West and Standoff at High Noon, another battle over the truth in a mystic Old West. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
My goodness. So you were, you were with us in early part of the year. I think it ended up being very early in February. And so we'd love to just have you take a moment and kind of catch up with us. Kellen, why don't we start with you? What's been going on this year for you so far?
Well, a lot. I was hired as the executive director of the Western Writers of America. And so I am now the key executive for them, the head honcho.
Are you getting any sleep?
Oh,
I tell you, I'm burning it at both ends, burning the candle. It was a lot for the transition. For some folks who may know who our Western writers are familiar with us. Whenever an executive director takes over for another executive director, that executive director's home becomes the home base of Western writers. So the executive director that I took over for was Max McCoy. And so I had to drive out to Kansas and meet him in Wichita and then take all his materials and then drive back. And then I had to turn around and set everything up and get everything into my name with funds and all that kind of good stuff that goes along with organizations such as this. And it's been a lot of board meetings. It's been a lot of wrangling with Wells Fargo. It's been a lot of wrangling with USPS because, of course, that roundup that you held up, we produce that, print that, pay for that, and mail it out to our membership. And so we have to take care of all that kind of stuff. So I basically just getting all that groundwork taken care of. I get to pay our taxes. I get to take care of the bills. So all those kind of things. So it's been.
And you have some road trips too, don't you?
Yes. So we do site visits. So one of the very first things I got to do right out of the gate was, because I was hired in August, was go to our Ursfield Symposium. And I will promote that. Outside of our convention, we have a symposium that happens over one day. And it stopped during the pandemic. But we have restarted it just this year. And we found a wonderful home base at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West, which is in Cody, Wyoming, the gateway to Yellowstone. And so we hold that right at the end of the tourist season in early September. And if folks are coming through or going, I would say please attend. It is wonderful. And hang out for an extra day or two and check out that Buffalo Bill Center of the West. It is the greatest Western museum this side of the Mississippi. It really is. It's five museums in one, and it's amazing. So, I went to St. Louis for a site visit, and then I get to go to Albuquerque in the beginning of the year, New York City, and then Reno after that.
Wow.
And then finally Prescott, Arizona. So,
oh my goodness.
The traveling.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, I read some of your comments about St. Louis. So, I was almost starting to get excited about St. Louis.
That's going to be where our convention, or the convention this year. And for folks who don't know, Western writers, anyone can attend our convention by purchasing registration. So you don't have to be a member of Western Writers. And we try to move it all over the West. So lots of folks who are closer to specific cities and places can get there. And this year it's in St. Louis. And next year it will be in Reno, Nevada. So set your calendars. It'll be June 17th through the 20th this year. In 2026. Excuse me, not this year. June 17th through the 20th in 2026 in St. Louis. So be there. Yeah. It'll be a ball. We always have a good time.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kellen, for sharing all that. Wow. Yep. We know as members, we get the emails and things. We know you've been very busy. But, Bill Markley is also a very busy gentleman. I think you put out at least one book this year, didn't you, Bill?
I did. I'm also a member of Western Writers of America. I've been a member since I can't even remember. Early, I think it was like 2002 or something like that. And I've been on the board and currently on board of directors for the Will Rogers Medallion Award. And they just had their handed out their medals earlier this month, November 1st, I think. That was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Also write for Roundup Magazine with WWA, a column called Wild Bill's Wild West. I don't know where they came up with that title, but so I'm active in very active with WWA and can't wait to get to St. Louis later on. So anyway, last 3 years I've been working on the biography of Jim Bridger, and it came out in September. Mm-hmm. And he's quite the character. Discovered the Great Salt Lake, explored all over the West, led wagon trains west, scientific expeditions. He learned languages, not only English, but French and Spanish and several Native American languages. And he was an expert in sign languages. So he's quite the character. And so if you want to have me back sometime, I could tell you a little bit more about this guy, who I think is probably one of the greatest people that was ever in the West. And there's a lot to him, and I don't think a lot of people know about him today. Yeah. So, what our projects are in the future.
Yeah. I was going to say it's very unusual for somebody to speak that many languages, and particularly in addition to the languages we're talking about, French, Spanish, and English, and those native languages are very difficult. So three or four of those, man, that's amazing.
The crazy thing is he could neither read nor write.
But he
picked up languages.
Bill, wasn't he on the expedition where Hugh Glass was attacked by the bear that The Revenant was based on? Wasn't he a young man at that time?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that would be a whole session in itself.
Okay, we'll have you back, Bill. Okay, I'm sold. We'll get you back in 2026.
There's a huge controversy on that.
That'd be very interesting.
Kellen and I can wrangle over.
Yes, there we go. So speaking of wrangling over, so you two have, want to get to our first wrangle, but we do want to just chat for a moment. Could you just briefly kind of tell us how the backstory, how did these books come to be, and shortly the process that you go through to put the wrangles, to put the showdowns together?
Well, I could say how it came about, and then Kellen could say our process, and then I'll chime in if he gets it wrong.
You are the white hat, after all.
Anyway, I think you've had on your show before Chris Entz. Chris and I, she's a famous Western writer focusing on women in the Old West. Chris and I were driving across the state of Nebraska for about 6 hours, and we started talking about a variety of topics, and we started talking about Cattle Kate. And she was the only woman hanged in Wyoming. And I said that she was hanged because the big stockman wanted to get access to her water. And she said, oh, no, she was hanged because she was trading sexual favors for cattle. And I said, no, that's wrong. And we kept arguing back and forth. And I'll just say the light bulb went over both of our heads and say, hey, wouldn't that be a great premise for a book? Two authors taking conflicting viewpoints. Long story short, Chris couldn't do it, and Kellen said, yes, I'll do it. And so we've been collaborating for years now on just going back and forth on some of these controversial topics from the Old West. So I'll let Kellen kind of describe how we do it.
Yeah. So in some cases, one of the two of us are adamant about a side, sort of like how he was describing with Cattle Kate and that. Yeah. And so those come immediately. You know, we take those sides immediately, but we want to flesh out an entire book. So you have 10 topics that you can look at. And so some of them, I'll admit, become a coin flip for us. What side are you going to take? And then you have to the death, defend it, you know? And so sometimes one of us gets the short end of the stick that we may not necessarily want, but, you know, Bill and I have our passions about certain subjects. Bill, of course, really good with Deadwood and Calamity Jane and the characters there, Wild Bill Hickok, you know, and so those controversies that surround those characters, he's really, really well versed in. I'm a big Buffalo Bill fan. If you can't see, he's right over my shoulder right there. And of course, nothing but controversy around Buffalo Bill's life and his stories and all those sort of things. And so many of those came to be, and we took those sides and turned it into the first two books in the series. And we're actually working on a third one right now. So no shortage of topics, but that's kind of how the stories develop. That's kind of how we put it together. And then the ones that we know the most about, we kind of do those right away. We get the low hanging fruit, and then we'll go, okay, we'll get another one later, you know? And then finally down the line, we finally grit our teeth and get to that final one. But the ones that are really that we can almost do just by memory, hit those right away. We churn those out, and we've kind of got a really pretty good process with it. I have to admit, Bill's lapping me right now with everything I'm doing for WWA. He's really on fire right now. So he's burning my house down. But that's kind of how we do it. And we have fun with it, and we argue, and we send each other chapters, and then both look at it. In the past, we've had other folks who we know are experts come in and take a look at some of the chapters and things like that, who've been nice enough to review for us make sure we get things aligned as best we can. And then the main process of the books, for those who haven't read them, is each chapter starts out with what we call just the facts. So just the facts are, this is what every historian, no matter coming on what side, agrees. These things took place. Okay. And then one of the two of us will switch chapters, but then one of the two of us will start with, okay, here's this side of the coin. And then the other one comes with the last half of the chapter and comes with, okay, this is the other side of the coin. And then we just move back and forth that way.
Got it.
And we try to stagger the books so you have a lot of interesting topics, you know, so it's not just all gunfighters or something like that. You have Native Americans, you have women in the West, Indians, all those kind of stories and the controversies that surround them. So we try to have a nice mix of stories.
And they are a great read. So we're going to take a very short break, but when we come back, we're going to do our first showdown. Who are we talking about in the segment when we come back?
We're talking about Tom Horn.
Tom Horn.
Yeah, that's right. So Tom Horn.
When we come back, Bill and Kellen will present their views on one of the hottest topics in the Old West, Tom Horn. Guilty of murder or not guilty? But first, here's a word about two of our sponsors that make Rendezvous with a Writer possible. If you are a writer, find out what our friends Krista Sukup of Blue Cottage Agency and Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison can do for you. Tom Horn takes center stage when we come back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Life is like a mountain railway with an engineer that's brave. We must make the run successful from the cradle to the grave. Watch the curves, the hills and tunnels, never falter, never fail. Your hand upon the throttle and your eye upon the rail. Blessed Savior, thou wilt guide us till we reach that blissful shore where the angels wait to join us in thy praise forevermore.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking with Bill Markley and Kellen Cutsforth. You know, and that song, Life's Railway to Heaven, that's quite a song. What's the significance of it?
And that was Barry Ward. That was Barry Ward. Good friend. Go ahead, Jim, with that question.
Again?
Again. So I'll answer that real quick. That was Tom Horn's favorite hymn, and two of his friends, who were brothers, sang that for him as they led him off to his execution.
Yeah. Yeah. And I and when I was reading, we were, you know, reading a course, and it just jumped off the page at me. I'm kind of a music person, and right away I had to go into my iTunes library and see what I had. And then
a great rendition of that too. Nitty-gritty dirt band.
So, Kellen, let's get started.
Yes.
Please share some Tom Horn facts.
So, most folks may in popular culture know Tom Horn, perhaps from the Steve McQueen movie, where Steve McQueen portrayed Tom Horn. There was another movie done fairly recently about Tom Horn. Tom Horn was a stock detective. So that meant that when there were cattle issues with many of the cattlemen in his time period, he would come in and investigate. Sometimes it would deal with rustlers. Sometimes it would deal with running brands and things like that to steal cattle. And in this instance, Tom Horn is a controversial figure because he was a stock detective, but he was also seen as a tool of the cattlemen. And so anytime cattlemen, especially the large ones, wanted to spread their wings and move out onto more land and take it perhaps from a smaller rancher, they would accuse them of being rustlers. They would accuse them of stealing. And a lot of times Tom Horn came in and he was given work as a stock detective. And oftentimes he sided with the large cattlemen. Tom Horn is also suspected of having killed other people besides the one that he was hung for. People that he accused of being cattle rustlers. Isom Dart is a well-known case. That he was accused of being a cattle rustler that Tom Horn allegedly killed. But in this instance, and just the facts, and when this becomes a very controversial case, in 1901, there was a man named Kells Nickel who owned ranch land, and he was a sheep rancher. he lived near several other, and this is about 40 miles outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming, where he had this land. Mm-hmm. And his neighbors were cattle ranchers. Well, Kells Nickel was, for all intents and purposes, a really a big jerk. He was a disliked guy. Mm-hmm. He had a really hot temper, and he would allow, he would do things like just allowing his sheep to stray onto the cattle land and then eat the roughage and eat the grass that the cattle needed to subsist on. And sometimes he would do it purposefully. Other times he'd do it and let him go onto that land. And so he had a lot of animosity with many of his neighbors. But the main neighbor that he had problems with that led to this incident was a man named James Miller. And James Miller was a cattle rancher, and he and Kells began to have fights back and forth about Kells allowing his sheep onto that cattle land. And they got into fights. They shot at one another. At one point, Kells was stabbed by Jim Miller. Jim Miller would carry a shotgun with him out of fear of being attacked by Kells. And when he was carrying that shotgun, it accidentally went off and killed one of his sons, Frank Miller. He blamed Kells for that incident, which is what led to Kells being stabbed. So eventually, Tom Horn was involved in this as a stock detective to begin to build a case against Kells Nickel. Kells Nickel had was married, had children, and one of his kids was a young boy, 14 years old, named Willie Nickel. Willie Nickel was threatened by James Miller at one point, and Willie Nickel was involved in a lot of the issues going on between the two fathers. In 1901, Willie Nickel was shot and killed. He was shot twice in the side, once underneath the armpit, and then once very close to the same shot that drove through his body. One exited his hip, and it cut through his aorta and killed him almost instantly. He made it about 20 yards or so trying to run back to his house. He fell, and the assailant, it is believed, it is alleged, stood over him, pulled his body over, and then took a rock and put the boy's head on the rock, rested it almost like a pillow, and left the body there to bleed out. When it was reviewed, when the crime scene was reviewed, they said they believed it was probably was. Not on his back, but on his stomach, and turned over because there was a pool of blood that looked like it had drained from him laying flat on his belly. This then eventually led to the suspicion of Tom Horn being the killer, because he again had been involved in suspicious deaths of other people who had been accused of going against cattlemen, of being rustlers, of using running brands, all that kind of stuff. And he eventually led to an inquest, and that inquest eventually led to a trial where Tom Horn was eventually convicted and hung for the murder of the young Willie Nickel in 1901. Bill?
Okay, Bill, take it away.
So let's pick it up after Willie's murdered. They did hold a coroner's inquest on scene. They went out and investigated the sites, and they interviewed a lot of people. And there was a Deputy U.S. Marshal, Joe LaFors, who met Horn. They had a conversation, and LaFors became suspicious of Horn. And he started, and after the coroner's inquest was done, he kept on the case, just kind of tracking Horn. And he finally kind of set Horn up. He there had always been
glad you admit there. That.
Yeah. Well, yeah, set him up to get it. to come to the truth. But anyway, there had been rumors that as Kellen had mentioned, a couple of rustlers had been killed in Browns Valley, down on the Colorado border. They'd been, you know, told to get out, and they still continued their crimes, and they were shot from a distance. A lot of people believed at the time that it was Tom Horn that did it, but they didn't, you know, really have any proof of that. Well, anyway, LaForce sets up this deal where some ranchers up in Montana need somebody to enforce some of the cattle rustlers up there. And Horn said, yeah, I can do that. And so LaForce set up a meeting with Horn in Cheyenne to talk to him about those working up in Montana there. Well, anyway, that was kind of a scam. I'll admit it was a scam to get Horn. And so Horn comes to Cheyenne. LaForce and Horn have a couple of drinks. A couple of drinks the night before. Horn continues to drink through the night, not with Joe there with him. Well, the next morning, Joe comes along. He says, let's go meet up in the U.S. Marshal's office in Cheyenne there. Unbeknownst to Horn, LaForce got it set up that in the adjoining room to where they're going to talk, he's got a stenographer in there and also a deputy U.S. Marshal in there laying on the floor right up against where the door is so that they can peek through the mail slot and hear it from under the door. So anyway, they're in this room, and Horn and LaForce come in, and they just start talking. In the morning, they start talking for several hours. And this is on January 11th, 1902. I just want to read part of the conversation because I want to get it right. Okay. Not like some people we know. No, just
entrapment. That's what I'm going to tell you. Entrapment.
Right.
So,
on that word.
Okay. So, LaForce says, how far was Willie Nichols killed? Horn said, about 300 yards. It was the best shot I ever made and the dirtiest trick I ever done. I thought at one time he would get away. So that was one of the statements that Horn made at the time. And then later on, as they go on, LaForce says, why did you put the rock under the kid's head after you killed him? That is one of your marks, isn't it? And Horn said, yes, that is the way I hang out my sign to collect money for a job of this kind. So those were, you know, based on those comments, those things, there was enough to have Horn arrested and then taken to trial. So at the trial, there was a lot of going back and forth in the testimony. Both Kellen and I read the transcripts from the trial, and it was fairly detailed. They got into the size of the caliber of the bullets that it hit him, and a lot of things. But another thing came out in the trial that there were three men from Denver Horn had gone down to Denver for, it was like a rodeo, but they called it a carnival at the time. And he was in a bar drunk, and he told these three guys, who were three reputable people, that he did kill Willie Nichols. And so those three guys came to the trial. So you had those three guys, and you also had Horn's own statements. The jury did find him guilty on October 24th, 1902. They tried to have a retrial. The judge said no. Then it took to the Wyoming Supreme Court. In the meantime, while they went to Wyoming Supreme Court, Horn and another guy busted out of jail. And Horn was running down the alleys and everything else. And they they finally captured him and brought him back to the jail. So the Wyoming Supreme Court said no. They then took it to the governor to try to have him give Horn clemency. The governor said no. And then Tom Horn was, eventually executed on November 20th, 1903. Mm-hmm. So the jury, the Supreme Court, the governor, they all said, nope, Tom Horn, guilty. And he was hanged. Actually, it was kind of interesting. They had it set up so that no one actually hanged him. He basically hanged himself by walking onto this platform. And they had it set up so that when he walked onto the platform, then water poured into a vessel. When it reached a certain height, then a plug was pulled and the trap door sprung. And so he basically hanged himself. So, yes, Tom Horn, guilty as charged.
I was quiet that whole time.
Hold on one second. We're not going to take any ads. I'm just looking at what time so that you have plenty of time. But Kellen, you have about 6 minutes.
We can make my case in less. Here's what I would say.
Go for it.
And I didn't. I said it once. I kept my mouth shut during that whole spiel. That if this happened today, and you answer me, if this happened today, would it even go to trial? That is entrapment. They entrapped him. And the other thing is Tom Horn was well known, and they had many witnesses who testified to this, that when he was in his cups, when he had a skin full of whiskey, he told every tale there was to tell. He took credit for things that people knew he had not done. All right. That's the first part of it. LaFors looked at no one else but Tom Horn. The investigation started and ended with Tom Horn. They only looked at him. The prosecutor, same thing. Anytime anything, they were in cahoots together. And it was because the state of Wyoming had enough with the cattlemen. And the cattlemen had been controlling the state more so than the elected officials. They had greater control because they held the power. And so in order to deliver a blow to the cattlemen, Tom Horn, their favorite tool, had a bullseye on him. But here's the other thing that Bill doesn't mention. During the trial, there was a woman by the name of Gwendolyn Kimmel, who was a school teacher, and she had nothing to do with Tom Horn, but she had overheard Miller's sons talking about allowing suspicion of the death of Willie Nickel to fall upon Tom Horn because he was protected by the cattlemen. So they wouldn't let him go down and they could get away with the murder. She was charged with perjury and saying that she lied. And then she was accused of having an affair with Tom Horn that never happened. After they put Tom Horn in the ground and killed him, then all of that was taken away and there was no case and there was no perjury and there was nothing. And they just let it go. But they impeached her testimony because they wanted to get Tom Horn. And of course, Tom Horn broke out and left. He'd just been sentenced to death. What was he got to lose? They're going to kill him. They're going to kill him. What else is he going to do? On top of that, a young cowboy named Otto Plaga also testified that he saw Tom Horn, and Tom Horn said he was breaking a horse. The boy said, well, I thought he was looking for rustlers. But either way, 25 miles away from where Willie Nickel was killed that very day at that very time, 25 miles away, breaking a horse, and Otto's stepfather, Raymond Heneke, corroborated what he said. And Otto knew Tom Horn because he rode with him another time to track down some rustlers at one point. So he knew him by sight. And he testified to that, and it was pushed away. Now, I will say, Tom Horn had an overconfidence issue. He believed that he could possibly be found guilty, and he didn't do enough to defend himself on the stand because he thought, well, I'm not guilty. I can't possibly be found guilty. So what do I have to do except just tell the truth? And what he said was, when the boy said he saw him, he said, well, I didn't see him. I didn't see the young cowboy out there, because he didn't. He was breaking a horse. He didn't see him. But two people, that's three different people. And then after that, Bill, Kells Nickel was nearly murdered, shot three times while he was milking a cow. And people saw the near assassins riding away, two men on horses owned by James Miller. And at the same time, Kells Nickel survived, and he said, yes, I think it was James Miller that shot me. These guys shots at each other. Why would Tom Horn care about killing a 14-year-old kid? It doesn't make any sense. It's just
let me know when I can rebut.
Very quickly, because this is the book we're talking about. It's one of the chapters, Standoff at High Noon. And Bill, you have like 1 minute to rebut, because then we're going to wrap the show.
Otto Plaga. I can't talk fast enough.
Because you know you're wrong. You can't make them alive quick enough.
Tom Horn said, you can't trust anything Otto Plaga says. So he said that during the inquest.
As I said, he wasn't very smart on the stand.
The school
teacher
had testified one way, and then when it was up in front of the governor, that's when she changed her testimony to say that was this other guy. After the trial, after the Supreme Court, in front of the governor, and that's when they said, hey, this is, you know, wrong, you're perjury or whatever at that point. And let's see, what was the third thing? Oh,
they
yeah.
They put him in the ground and then let her go.
Yes, the third thing was that, the witnesses had said that there were two riders and that sort of thing. They were all Nichols, you know, family people. They could have made that up.
So somebody tries to shoot him. Other witnesses somebody tries to shoot him. They already got Tom Horn. Somebody tries to shoot him, and they, oh, it's Tom Horn. Tom Horn did it. I mean, come on.
Okay, gentlemen. All right. Okay, so if you've been watching or listening, and you're on Facebook or later tonight or whatever, leave a comment. You know, what did you think? Which way should it go? And we know that you're working on a third book. We have to have you back next year. So let's keep in touch to see what will work in your calendar, because we didn't get to Calamity Jane, and there's so much more to talk about. But we are now counting down at 1.5 minutes. So I hope you'll understand that we want to thank you both for being with us tonight.
Don't take too much time.
And we want to thank John and Emily Goodwin for being here. We want to, Jim, you have a quick quote. Jim has a quick quote. And read it fast, honey.
He's just from the coroner's inquest. The coroner asked Tom Horn if Kells Nickel ever told him to stay off his property. Horn replies, no, sir. I wouldn't allow 15 of the worst men in the world to tell me that. I'm at liberty to go where I please in the country. I wouldn't stand for anybody to tell me anything of the kind. If my business took me through that country, I would go. He couldn't tell me that. He wouldn't tell me half before I would get him to stop. That's the essence of Tom Horn.
Next week is Thanksgiving, and we are going to be sharing a best of rendezvous with our show that we aired last year, all about joy and food. So tune in for Janice E. Kirk, Drawing Close, Encountering Joy, for the first part of the show. And then she's joined by our good friend, also Natalie Bright, with All About Food. And we even cooked up one of the recipes from one of her two books. And they will be with us a replay next week. So thank you, gentlemen, so much for being with us. Do you have a parting comment?
It's a great fun show. Thanks, guys.
You bet.
We'll see you down the trail.
And we always.